Welcome to Local Voices on 94.7 KPIP LP Fayette. Brought to you by the Boonslick Historical Society and its president, respected Fayette community member, Jim Steele, journalist, graphic designer, and historian. This edition of Local Voices airs every Monday from noon to 4 p.m. and focuses on a glance back at the music and history of World War II as it affected Fayette, America, and the world. Thank you again for tuning in to this special edition, A Glance Back, here on Local Voices on 94.7 KPIP.
The gold of the day. Someone waits for me, and the gold of her hair crowns the blue of her eyes. Like a halo, tenderly. If only I The gold of the day. Someone waits for me.
Taking you back to the world of the greatest generation on 94.7 KPIP.
I don't need your photograph to keep by my bed. Your picture is always in my head. I don't need your portrait, dear, to call you to mind. For sleeping or waking, dear, I find the very thought of you, and I forget to do the little ordinary things that everyone ought to do. I'm living in a kind of daydream. I'm happy as a king. And foolish though it may seem, to me that's everything. The mere idea of you, the longing here for you. You'll never know how slow the moments go till I'm near to you. I see your face in every flower, your eyes in stars above. It's just the thought of you, the very thought of you, my love. You, the longing here for you. You'll never know how slow the moments go till I'm near to you. I see your face in every flower and your eyes in stars above. It's just the thought of you, the very thought of you, my love.
Thank you. on the street. Now I ask you very confidentially, ain't she sweet? Ain't she nice? Look her over once or twice. Now I ask you very confidentially, ain't she nice? Just cast an eye in her direction. Oh me, oh my, ain't that affection? Say, I repeat, don't you think she's kind of neat? And I ask you very confidentially, ain't she sweet?
Listening to Local Voices on 94.7 KPIP. Now, our local historian Jim Steele will take us back to the age of World War II.
You're listening to 94.7 KPIP's Local Voices, A Glance Back. I'm Jim Steele reporting, and today we'll continue to talk about the legacy of Winston Churchill. As you'll recall from last week, we talked about the 75th anniversary of Winston Churchill's famous Iron Curtain speech at Westminster College in Fulton, taking place March the 5th, 1946. Now, that speech, according to Russian history, was the beginning of the Cold War. Because of Churchill's warning, later on, President Truman introduced the Truman Doctrine the following year, which then changed America's policy on foreign affairs. And as you may have learned from your American history, that was the beginning of what America considered the Cold War. Okay, let's fast forward to the year 1960. At that time, Westminster's then-president, Dr. Robert Davidson, decided there should be a memorial to permanently commemorate Churchill's visit and his legacy. Davidson, inspired by having seen a Life magazine article which showed the devastation of Christopher Wren's historic churches in London during the Blitz, Davidson then proposed to purchase a church that already was slated for demolition and then to rebuild it at Westminster College. The project had the support of a lot of folks. Winston Churchill himself, he was still living at the time, in addition to former presidents Harry Truman and Dwight Eisenhower, and then newly elected President John F. Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson also supported it, as well as the powers that be in London and many others, of course. Ultimately, 22 churches were considered, and the Church of St. Mary the Virgin Aldermanbury was chosen. With the help of President Kennedy, arrangements were made to have the church moved and then rebuilt in Fulton. Now, the move was not an easy task. First, the ruins had to be meticulously chronicled, stone by stone, all 7,000 of them, and then carefully dismantled before being transported from London to Fulton. Then it had to be reconstructed while maintaining the original interior design. The organ in the new setup in Fulton was built on site by a man by the name of Noel Mander, who came from a family of organ makers who started their business in the 1700s. Mander was a fireman during World War II and was working nearby when the church was bombed. He remembered the terrible shrieking of the organ as it reacted to the flames and the intense heat. Mander went on to say that he was, quote, delighted to install an organ in the reconstructed church in Fulton. Former President Harry Truman had the honor of breaking ground for the church, and that took place on April 19, 1964. The church in Fulton was completed 5 years later, in April 1969, 51 years ago. Amid much fanfare, the dedication ceremony took place on May the 7th, 1969. Representing Queen Elizabeth was the Earl of Mountbatten of Burma, who gave also the dedication speech. Other dignitaries included Mary Somas, Churchill's youngest daughter, U.S. Ambassador to England then, Averill Harriman, former Governor John M. Dalton of Missouri, and U.S. General Mark Clark. Today, the site in Fulton is known as America's National Churchill Museum, formerly the Winston Churchill Memorial and Library. And as you, of course, know, it's located on the Westminster College campus in Fulton, not far from where Churchill spoke back in 1946. That was in the college's historic gymnasium. The museum commemorates the life and times of Sir Winston, and it has three distinct but related elements: the church we've just talked about, the museum, and the breakthrough sculpture outside. We'll talk about that in a minute. The central element is the church, of course, we just mentioned. It had been designed by architect Christopher Wren and destroyed during the Blitz. At that time, it also had been the church that had been rebuilt after the fire of London in the 12th century. Beneath the church is the Churchill Museum, renovated in 2006. Through interactive new exhibits, the museum tells the story of Churchill's life, discussing his personal and political life and his legacy. Additionally, the Clementine Spencer Churchill Reading Room houses an extensive research collection about Prime Minister Churchill and his era. Outside the church stands the breakthrough sculpture, formed from eight sections of the Berlin Wall. Churchill's granddaughter, an artist by the name of Edwana Sandys, designed the sculpture in order to commemorate both the Sinews of Peace speech, which is officially the name of his speech, and also the fall of the Berlin Wall. At present, the museum is temporarily closed due to recent renovations and also the COVID pandemic. However, it is expected to reopen shortly, so be sure to call in advance before traveling to Fulton. For 94.7 KPIP's Local Voices, A Glance Back, I'm Jim Steele.
That was our Glance Back in Time with Jim Steele, president of the Boonslick Historical Society. This series with Jim Steele will continue every Monday from noon to 4 p.m. during Local Voices, only on 94.7 KPIP.
Thank you.
Take a glance at the past and present with Jim Steele on 94.7 KPIP.
You marched away and left this town as empty as can be. I can't sit under the apple tree with anyone else but me. For there is no secret lover that the draft board didn't discover. They're either too young or too old. They're either too gray or too grassy green. The pickings are poor and the crop is lean. What's good is in the army. What's left will never harm me. I'm either their first breath of spring or else I'm their last little fling. I must confess to one romance I'm sure you will allow. He tries to serenade me, but his voice is changing now. I'm finding it easy to stay good as gold. They're either too young or too old. Thank you. fortress will hold. They're either too young or too old. I'll never, never fail ya when you are in Australia, or out in the Aleutians, or off among the Russians, and flying over Egypt. Your heart will never be gypped. And when you get to India, I'll still be what I've been, dear. I've looked the field over, and lo and behold, they're either too young.
Take a glance back at Winston Churchill, who gave his famous Iron Curtain speech predicting the Cold War right here in Missouri. Take a listen to excerpts from the historic address delivered March 5th, 1946 at Westminster College in Fulton, Missouri, while in the presence of President Harry S. Truman.
I am happy to bid you welcome to the 7th lecture under the auspices of the Green Foundation at Westminster College. Today, in this quiet college setting, in the very heart of America, ladies and gentlemen, it is with a great deal of happiness that I welcome you to this lecture, the John Finley Green Lecture for 1946. And now I have the honor, ladies and gentlemen, to present the President of the United States.
This crowd of some 2,000 people gathered here in the gymnasium at Fulton, at Westminster College, are on their feet now, applauding and cheering Mr. Truman as he stands there in a black robe with purple binding, in a scholar's hat, the mortarboard, smiling as the photographers take his picture. The audience is still applauding Mr. Truman. He's nodding to them, smiling. In just a moment, he will introduce the former Prime Minister, Winston Churchill.
President McClure, Governor Donnelly, ladies and gentlemen, you know, this is one of the greatest pleasures and privileges I have had since I have been President of the United States. I appreciate most highly Governor Donnelly's welcome to Mr. Churchill and myself. And I'm very thankful that Dr. McClure suggested to me that Mr. Churchill be invited to deliver this lecture today. I had a letter from Mr. Churchill, 6 months ago or more, in which he said he was considering a vacation in the United States or in North Africa. I sent him Dr. McClure's invitation and made a longhand note on the bottom of it, telling him that if he would spend his vacation in the United States at whatever point he chose to pick, and then would deliver this lecture, I would make it a point to come to Missouri and personally welcome him and introduce him for that lecture. I had never met Mr. Churchill personally until the Berlin conference between Mr. Stalin, Mr. Churchill, and myself. I became very fond of both of them. They are men, and they are leaders in this world today when we need leadership. It's a pleasure to me to introduce Mr. Churchill. He's one of the great men of the age. He's a great Englishman. He's a great Englishman, but he's half American. I am happy that he came here to deliver it, and it's one of the great privileges of my lifetime to be able to present to you that great world citizen, Winston Churchill.
And this crowd of Westminster College rise to their feet to pay tribute and applause and shout for the great former Prime Minister of Great Britain, the Honorable Winston Churchill. He stands now at the speaker's platform. He is clothed in a red robe, a scholastic robe, perhaps an English version. He wore just before he arose to his feet here, a black velvet cap. He turns now and thanks the President. In just a moment, you will hear Mr. Churchill. Mr. Churchill is still standing at the speaker's stand. He has shooed all the photographers away, and he's just now ready to start.
President McClure, ladies and gentlemen, and last, but certainly not least, President of the United States of America. I am very glad indeed to come to Westminster College this afternoon, and I am complimented that you should give me a degree from an institution whose reputation has been so solidly established. The name Westminster somehow or other seems familiar to me. I feel as if I'd heard of it before. Indeed, now that I come to think of it, it was at Westminster that I received a very large part of my education. In politics, dialectic, rhetoric, and one or two other things. So, in fact, we have both been educated at the same or similar, or at any rate kindred, establishments. It is also an honor, ladies and gentlemen, perhaps almost unique, for a private visitor to be introduced to an academic audience by the President of the United States. Amid his heavy burdens, duties, and responsibilities, unsought but not recoiled from, the President has traveled 1,000 miles to dignify and magnify our meeting here today. And to give me an opportunity of addressing this kindred nation, as well as my own countrymen across the ocean, and perhaps some other countries too. The President has told you that it is his wish, as I'm sure it is yours, that I should have full liberty to give my true and faithful counsel in these anxious and baffling times. Now, I shall certainly avail myself of this freedom. Let me, however, make it clear that I have no official mission or status of any kind. And I speak only for myself. There is nothing here but what you see. I can therefore allow my mind, with the experience of a lifetime, to play over the problems which beset us on the morrow of our absolute victory in arms, and to try to make sure, with what strength I have, that what has been gained with so much sacrifice and suffering shall be preserved for the future glory and safety of mankind. It is my duty, however, for I am sure you would not wish me not to state the facts as I see them to you. It is my duty to place before you certain facts about the present position in Europe. From Stettin in the Baltic to Trieste in the Adriatic, an iron curtain has descended across the continent. The safety of the world, ladies and gentlemen, requires a new unity in Europe, from which no nation should be permanently outcast. Behind that line lie all the capitals of the ancient states of Central and Eastern Europe: Warsaw, Berlin, Prague, Vienna, Budapest, Belgrade, Bucharest, and Sofia. All these famous cities and the populations around them lie in what I must call the Soviet sphere. And all our subjects, in one form or another, not only to Soviet influence, but to a very high and in some cases increasing measure of control from Moscow. The Russian-dominated Polish government has been encouraged to make enormous and wrongful inroads upon Germany, and mass expulsions of millions of Germans on a scale grievous and undreamed of are now taking place. The communist parties, which were very small in all these eastern states of Europe, have been raised to preeminence and power far beyond their numbers, and are seeking everywhere to obtain totalitarian control. An attempt is being made by the Russians in Berlin to build up a quasi-communist party in their zone of occupied Germany by showing special favors to groups of left-wing German leaders. At the end of the fighting last June, the American and British armies withdrew westward in accordance with an earlier agreement to a depth at some point of 150 miles upon a front of nearly 400 miles in order to allow our Russian allies to occupy this vast expanse of territory which the Western democracies had conquered. If now the Soviet government tries by separate action to build up a pro-communist Germany in their areas, this will cause new serious difficulties in the American and British zones and will give the defeated Germans the power of putting themselves up to auction between the Soviets and the Western democracies. Whatever conclusions may be drawn from these facts, and facts they are, this is certainly not the liberated Europe we fought to build up, nor is it one which contains the essentials of permanent peace. I do not believe that Soviet Russia desires war. What they desire is the fruits of war and the indefinite expansion of their power and doctrines. But what we have to consider here today, while time remains, is the permanent prevention of war and the establishment of conditions of freedom and democracy as rapidly as possible in all countries. Our difficulties and dangers will not be removed by closing our eyes to them. They will not be removed by mere waiting to see what happens, nor will they be removed by a policy of appeasement. What is needed is a settlement, and the longer this is delayed, the more difficult it will be, and the greater our dangers will become. If all British moral and material forces and convictions are joined with your own in fraternal association, the high roads of the future will be clear. Not only for us, but for all. Not only for our time, but for a century to come. If the population of the English-speaking commonwealths be added to that of the United States, with all that such cooperation implies, in the air, on the sea, all over the globe, and in science, and in industry, and in moral force, there will be no quivering, precarious balance of power to offer its temptation to ambition or adventure. On the contrary, there will be an overwhelming assurance of security if we adhere faithfully to the Charter of the United Nations and walk forward in sedate and sober strength, seeking no one's land or treasure, seeking to lay no arbitrary control upon the thoughts of men.
Was Winston Churchill and parts of his famous, quote, Iron Curtain speech that predicted the Cold War on March 5th, 1946 at Westminster College in Fulton, Missouri. You're listening to Local Voices, a glance back on 94.7 KPIP.
Thank you.
It's a glance back at World War II with Jim Steele on 94.7 KPIP.
PFC to CPL, SGT the LT, CP the OD, the MP makes you do cappy. It's a GI Jive, man alive. It starts with a bugler blowing reveille over your bed when you arrive. Hey, Jack, that's a GI Jive. Rootily toot, jump in your suit, make a salute. Arrivoot, after you wash and dress, more or less, you go get your breakfast from a beautiful little cafe they call the Mess. Hey, Jack, when you convalesce, out of your seat, into the street, make with your feet, or read. If you're a PVT, your duty is to salute the L-I-E-U-T. But if you brush the L-I-E-U-T, the M-P makes you K-P on the Q-T. It's just a G-I jive, man alive. They give you a private tank that features a little device called fluid drive. Hey, Jack, after you revive, chunk all your junk back in your trunk, fall on your bunk. It's just a G.I. Jive, man alive. They give you a private tank that features a little device called fluid drive. Hey, Jack, after you revive, chunk all your junk back in your trunk, fall on your bunk, clunk. If you're PFC and you fail to salute the LT, the MP makes you KP on the QT. Then you'll go to sleep before you count to five. But when you wake up in the morning, you'll have to do the GI Jive.
A lady known as Paris, romantic, charming, has left her old companions and faded from view. Lonely men with lonely eyes are seeking her in vain. Her streets are where they were, but there's no sign of her. She has left the same. The last time I saw Paris, her heart was warm and gay. I heard the laughter of her heart in every street cafe. The last time I saw Paris, her trees were dressed for spring, and lovers walked beneath those trees, and birds found songs to sing. I dodged the same old taxi cabs that I had dodged for years. The chorus of their squeaky horns was music to my ears. The last time I saw Paris, her heart was warm and gay. No matter how they change her, I'll remember her that way. the last time I saw Paris, her heart was warm and gay. I heard the laughter of her heart in every street cafe. The last time I saw Paris, her trees were dressed for spring, and lovers walked beneath those trees, and birds found songs to sing. I dodged the same old taxi cabs that I had dodged for years. The chorus of their squeaky horns was music to my ears. The last time I saw Paris, her heart was warm and gay. No matter how they change her, I'll remember her that way.
That all aboard. 7